The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Thursday Match Committee Fox Footy Podcast. My name's Tom Morris, filling in for Ben Waterworth, who is swanning around Europe with his lovely wife Annie and having a very good time doing so. But joining me today in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker is, of course, Max Lawton, Australia's preeminent esports journalist. Your debut for the year. Welcome, Max.
Very pleased to be here. More like the Max Committee, am I right?
Oh, wow. That is one of the great starts, am I right? I approve of that, Thomas.
I like to call a false start.
Well, try to do better than that, Tom Chadwick, who, of course, is Melbourne's most eligible bachelor and self-appointed Prince of Moomba.
Where do you get off with these introductions,
well,
Thomas?
Well, you can actually... If you heard what I said, you said self-appointed Prince of Moomba.
What is Moomba? I haven't been in Melbourne long enough to even understand what Moomba
well,
is.
Well, the Prince of Moomba means you're actually not the king. You're just a little below that, Tom.
Who's the king, incidentally?
Well, it changes every year, doesn't it, Max?
Usually Daryl Summers, I believe.
Oh, dearie me.
Anyway, let's get on to the real important stuff, which, of course, is round 12. It's a bye weekend for some clubs, but there is some important games going on, of course, starting tonight with Sydney versus the Western Bulldogs. But first of all, I'd love your big selection move for this week, Tom.
Well, I think it's a good call that Kurt Tibbett has been dropped. He's been, not playing good enough footy. I mean, I think 12 months ago you could argue he was in pretty decent form, but this year he's been quite poor. I know we always harp on how much money he's getting paid and what the Swans gave up for him, but bottom line is 3 goals in 5 games. We understand it's absolutely pouring down in Sydney tonight. So I don't think it's a pretty good move from John Longmire, particularly given they need to do something else against the Dogs, because the Dogs seem to have the wood over Sydney. So I think it's a pretty good call.
And I think particularly the most interesting move is actually the one that wasn't made, which is Tom Liberatore staying out of the side for the third week in a row. There's been a lot of chat about it, and particularly, as Tom said, given it's wet, that could be an issue. You've got Tim English playing and Tom Liberatore not.
Yes, and not even as an emergency.
No.
Redpath, Hardy Church and Zane Cordy, the emergency. So not even in the mix to play. It's quite remarkable.
No, which suggests that as Beveridge has been doing throughout the entire season, he's been really cutthroat about making these decisions, and players who aren't in form aren't just going to be in the side. It's not a given. They've got so many good players out of the side, you can excuse them for doing it as well, I suppose.
And what about your big selection move for this week, Max?
Well, that's the interesting one for me. I'm not sure what there is from the other games to come. Yep. We'll find out later tonight.
My particular one is the Melbourne game. I'm really interested to see what they do with Sam Wiedemann, whether he plays or whether he doesn't play, and also who Collingwood push down in the forward line to replace Jamie Elliott and have class in the midfield with Daniel Wells, because Darcy Moore needs help. He's been good the last couple of weeks, but how they kick their goals, Collingwood's going to be a big move.
Interesting.
Of course, it's time to pick your mid-year All-Australian side, brought to you by the Australian Almonds. Jump on foxfooty.com.au/AllAuz now to pick from the squad of 40 hard nuts. That, of course, is foxfooty.com.au. Max, our website, and Thomas Chadwick from Fox Sports News and AFL Tonight. Let's talk about the Sydney and the Western Bulldogs a little bit more, Tom. The Dogs have won the last two versus Sydney. You said it is going to be wet at the SCG tonight. Does that favour the Dogs or the Swans?
Well, I think it favours the Dogs, given their contested ball work. Having said that, Sydney play the SCG so well, but funnily enough, they can't play it that well against the Western Bulldogs. It's funny how teams match up against each other. See, I guess, conversely, you can use it as an Adelaide Geelong. Somehow, Geelong just beat Adelaide for fun, and for some reason, Western Bulldogs just match up against the Sydney Swans really well. We know earlier in the year, the Bulldogs beat them at Etihad, but this is going to be a different kettle of fish. And I actually like Sydney here. I think Sydney have to win to play finals, if there's any hope of playing finals. If they lose, they're done. So for me, I think Sydney are in a good position here, given I think they've selected well, as we mentioned earlier. I think the fact that Tippett isn't playing is a good thing for them, considering it's going to be so wet. And for them, I know it's mid-season, but it's a mini-final in many ways.
Well, at 3-7, absolutely.
Yeah.
At 3-8, you're definitely not going to make finals unless you're Richmond from a couple of years ago. And the Dogs, they haven't been going particularly well, although they played well against St Kilda in their last game before the bye, which suggests that both teams are in the same sort of position where they do really need a win, because the Dogs, what are they, 6-5 at the moment, on the fringe of the 8? They'd like to consolidate that. We know they're a very good finals team, but it's getting to the finals that might be an issue for them at some point.
Do we forget the fact that the Dogs weren't even close to one of the best teams during the home and away season last year? They finished 7th on the ladder, so we know they had a brilliant final series. But over the course of the last 12 months, they haven't been close to being a top four team.
But I think that's why they're going to stand up in finals so much. Mm. They've got a finals style football. I believe they've laid the most tackles.
Yes.
Something like 76 tackles per game, so which is extraordinary, really. And given it's going to be wet tonight, it's a small ground on the SCG. I think they're going to be hard to beat, but I still reckon Sydney are the goods.
And they did finish seventh, but they did win 15 games as well. It was such a bizarre season where all of those teams were winning so many games. That usually gets you into the top four, if not close. So they were a better-than-expected seventh-place team, if not a dominant team, based on the percentage. They clearly weren't one of the best six teams, and then they showed that they were the best of them all.
How many wins will get you into the finals this year, do you reckon, Max?
Given how even it is, you would think around 12, 13 to be sure.
Yeah.
But there might even be a team that sneaks in at 11 if everyone's really close together.
And that could easily happen with a good percentage as well. It is so tight and it's so even. We've mentioned on the podcast before, there's really 17 teams that can beat anyone on their day.
Yep.
Brisbane's probably the only team that's out of that. But GWS looks to be the dominant team, but yet then they've had a number of very close games against teams that are mid-ranked, like Collingwood and then Richmond, who are slightly better than that as well. So they're not as dominant as the normal first-place team is either.
Their last four wins have come by about 28 points total. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Boys, can we put a finger on why Sydney aren't as formidable at the SCG this year?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
They're not as formidable everywhere, though.
Yeah.
So I suppose
injuries haven't helped. But when Sydney play at the SCG, you usually just strike that down as a win.
Yeah, and that game against Hawthorn a couple of weeks ago was bizarre because they just looked like it was their game for all money. It was their contest, and then Burgoyne unloaded from 60 and Roughhead kicked it from 55 and the Hawks won. But really, the Swans looked certain to win that game. I know they had a couple of injuries there, but it was remarkable they lost it. Same with the Collingwood one, I think it was in round two or round three when they lost by a point. They looked certain to win that match as well. They're just not quite getting the job done as they normally do. That's normally their best attribute, isn't it? They just get the job done even when they're not at their best.
I think Hawthorn's got that sort of freaky dark voodoo magic sometimes that just gets them over the line. But that's what happens in close games sometimes. You lose a few and then you just have a record much worse than your percentage suggests because the Swans' percentage is still positive.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they're 3-7.
Boys, who goes to Stringer tonight?
It has to be Dane Rampey, I would have thought.
I would have thought as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a terrific player. And Stringer was awesome against the Saints a couple of weeks ago. But the Saints, geez, they let him go a little bit. It was sort of a Dylan Roberton matchup in many ways. And Roberton is such an offensive player, not used to playing that defensive role, at least this year, since Carlisle and Brown have come in. And Stringer really just had his way, especially in the first half. Okay, let's move ahead to the Queen's birthday game now. Let's move 4 days ahead to the Queen's birthday. Melbourne versus Collingwood. Probably the match of the round, Max. What do you make of this one?
Absolutely the match of the round. Although somewhat hurt by the Pies' injuries. It's just that loss came at such a cost. Elliott has been so good since he came back. Wells has been excellent since he came back. It's still a fascinating game, though, particularly given Melbourne, because they're such a team where they could absolutely come out and thump Collingwood, and then they could absolutely come out and get thumped, because you just do not know what you're going to get, because they're so young, and that inexperience results in these games where it's just so odd.
Does Collingwood winning three in a row actually hurt them for this one, Tom Chadwick? Are they good enough to win four on the trot?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I don't think it hurts them at all. If anything, it gives them a bit of confidence. Mm. Yes, it's going to be tough coming back from Perth on a Sunday night. However, I think, you know, these days with the training loads, etc., I think they're going to be fine. The other thing that's, without stating the obvious, this is clearly going to be one in the middle because we've got a bona fide, excellent midfield of Collingwood up against a almost next generation.
An emerging midfield.
Exactly right. Yeah. And it's going to be good to see how the Melbourne youngsters cope against the likes of Pendlebury, etc., because I think it's fair to say the Melbourne midfield is Collingwood in 2 or 3 years' time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And particularly given the war of words during the week between Taylor Adams and Bernie Vince, which is just sensational. I love it. Particularly, a lot of these AFL players say this to each other and they send, like, you know, joking texts to each other. But the fact that it's been out in public, and you can tell a lot of it's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
But it's just great to watch, particularly when it's guys like Bernie Vince and these couple of guys who love a bit of cheek. I think it's going to hopefully spill over on Monday.
It's just grown legs this week, hasn't it? An interview was done with ABC on Sunday evening, and then there was an interview on RSN during the week in the morning, and then there was the footy show, and Bernie Vince did a press conference, and it's just... And Nick Del Santo spoke about it on AFL Tonight. Max, you wrote an article on that as well.
Yes.
It's quite remarkable how what seemingly is a very small statement and something Taylor Adams didn't even remember until he got on the bus after the game blows up into this big thing. You mentioned Bernard Vince, Tom. Max, Bernie Vince had 42 touches last Queen's birthday.
Solid.
But he looks more likely to be playing as a tagger in these games now rather than that half-back role with Jordan Lewis in.
Well, you would think so because there's just so much good talent in that Melbourne midfield. You could fairly argue this is the two best midfields in the comp.
Mm.
Melbourne, like, what are they? They've had the second best contested footy team in the comp this season. Collingwood, as we know, at the start of the season, Champion Data came out and said they're the best midfield in the comp because of their depth. And that surprised people, but you look at how much there is going on in both of these teams, and it's very fair to say, I would imagine. You wouldn't think Bucks could let Vince go loose again if he's going to have that much of an impression on the game as he did last year.
And we'll find out the selection. Well, we won't know for selection for sure until 90 minutes before the game on Monday, but it's going to be interesting to see what Melbourne do with the ruck situation. Max Gawn's still 2 weeks away. Jake Spencer is available, Tom, but can you bring him straight back in? Or do you have to play Cam Pederson and Jack Watts in that duo role?
No, I don't think you bring Spencer straight back in. I think Cam Pederson's actually doing a pretty decent job, given his physical attributes. The problem is he's playing against a very good ruckman in Grundy this week. So that'll be interesting to see how Collingwood get that dominance, particularly given their experienced midfielders of Adams, Treloar, Pendlebury. But no, I don't think you bring Spencer straight back in. And I think you use Pederson and then potentially use Watts as a pinch hitter in the ruck.
Heard an interesting theory this morning from our good friend Andrew Weaver downstairs at foxfooty.com.au, who told me that part of the reason Melbourne is struggling early in games is because they're not winning ruck taps. So it takes them a quarter to actually start reading the ruck tap of the opposition ruckman. Just wondering whether that has any merit or not.
I think you could possibly say there's some merit to that. I also think that when you're dedicated to not winning the ruck taps, it's almost simpler in the contest because you just know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to try and tap it to the Pies' advantage or the opponent's advantage in this case. So,
how do you think Collingwood are going to go with the injuries that they suffered last week? How much is that going to hurt them?
Well, I think Jamie Elliott is a huge out. Yep. We saw Collingwood earlier in the year be quite insipid with no Elliott and no Wells. And their effort was quite good on those occasions. They just didn't have the class. They rely on Elliott so much, not just to kick two or three, but to put the forward line pressure on and to give them another avenue to goal, a forward that the Melbourne defenders need to look after. Daniel Wells is one of the only players in that team that can hit a target regularly. And he's out. Elliott's out. Goldsack is a spiritual leader, and what he did last week was unbelievably courageous. But they can...
Don't underestimate Goldsack going out, though.
He's important.
He can play both ends of the ground.
But he's more replaceable than the other two, is he not?
Sure, but don't underestimate how important he is to the 22. Sure, he's not at the class of those two other guys, but he's arguably just as important.
They've been good recently, Collingwood, though. They're using the corridor a lot more, Max, and they're actually playing a brand of football that you can now sort of imagine playing finals, whereas 6 weeks ago, you couldn't see it.
I was weirdly optimistic on this team coming into the season precisely because of that. You could see it coming. You could see the talent on the list. It is just how that forward line does fire. It's been misfiring at best, and with Elliott out, you'd have to imagine they sort of revert back to their early season stuff, which would be disappointing, but maybe the end result.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how that one plays out. Melbourne has just won back-to-back games this year just once, which just shows how inconsistent they've been and how infuriating they are for Demon supporters, Tom and Max. Speaking of supporters, Adelaide versus St Kilda, Tom. You are Adelaide's number one correspondent here in Melbourne. It's a Friday night clash at the Adelaide Oval. St Kilda have a shocking record at the Adelaide Oval. I think they've lost all six there, been thumped on numerous occasions by the Adelaide Crows. I remember one game last year, a Sunday evening bashing, in which Hugh Goddard hurt his Achilles.
Yep.
There might have been another couple of injuries as well. The Adelaide Crows are so awesome at home, but they did lose to Melbourne there recently. Does St Kilda have any chance in this game?
Oh, look, they've got a chance, but you would think that it's Adelaide's to lose. If Adelaide were terrible and St Kilda were good, then that's probably the only chance. The problem is that, obviously, Adelaide's scoring power, we've spoken about it so much, they're averaging something like 118 points per game, even when they lose. So they lost last week against Geelong. They still kicked a half-decent score. Look, it's going to be tough for the Saints. You mentioned, Tom, their record, particularly at Adelaide Oval, is shocking. And this is one of those things, as we talked about earlier, for some reason teams just match up well against some teams, and for some reason Adelaide just seem to be way too good for St Kilda. Look, it might change. Adelaide, we know, have been relatively inconsistent, particularly in the last month, but I can't really see a major upset here.
Oh, I would think the Crows would win as well, but let's keep in mind that the Saints' awful record at the Adelaide Oval has come in the last 3 years when they've been awful.
Yeah,
the Adelaide Oval's been open, so those things sort of coincide to create that stat as well. I would agree. Adelaide's scoring power should be too much because the question is whether the Saints can do what Geelong did, which was cut down on that counter-attack game. They've been scoring 50 points a game on the counter-attack, the Crows. They scored something like 3 goals from it against Geelong. If they can do that, that's what's going to do it, as much as tagging Rory Sloane, whether they do that.
Who goes to Sloane?
Yeah, it's a really tough one.
If they tag him.
Because St Kilda have only really had two proper taggers in the last 5 years. One was Tom Curran, who's not on the list anymore. He's captaining Sandringham. He's injured at the moment in the VFL. And the other one was Maverick Weller.
Well, I think Mav is a is a good like
but
for like.
But he's been playing far more forward lately and hasn't really tagged in a couple of years. Alan Richardson has consistently stated on AFL 360 that they will always think about it, but they never want to compromise their own offensive game. And if there's a criticism with St Kilda, Max, is that they are probably a little bit too offensive and easy to score against at times.
Which is a thing that's hard to do both at the same time with a young team. Still, you've got to consider how young this team is, inexperienced this team is. I think all the noise has been that they won't be tagging him. You saw ahead of the Geelong game, Geelong coming out on the Monday, the Tuesday, we're going to tag Sloan. And you wonder how much of that is a mental thing as much as a physical thing of saying we're going to get into your head about
call.
This.
Yeah, good call. A bit of pre-match psych.
I wonder whether or not the boys from AFL 360 exchange notes as well when they're in the green room. Obviously, Chris Scott took Adelaide to the cleaners last week. Alan Richardson takes them on this week. How much do they take out of Geelong's win against Adelaide, Tom? Do they use a blueprint?
I think they have to. It's quite simplistic. I'm sure Champion Data has some more detailed stats and infographics on that. But the way that Geelong were able to use that goalkeeper and stop that player at the back was so important. And surely St Kilda should look to do the same thing. The perfect goalkeeper for St Kilda has always been Sean Dempster. He's not there anymore. Yep. So it's going to be very interesting to see who they get to play that role. Dylan Roberton needs to be a little bit further up the field. So does Jimmy Webster.
Speaking of those goals over the back, what did you make of the criticism of Josh Jenkins this week? Some scribes calling him the most overrated big forward in the comp. Max, your thoughts?
Well, that would be happening after a slightly more disappointing season than the big one that he had last year, I suppose. Perhaps unfair.
Yep.
I think he can be a very important player for this team, but at the same time, you can get a lot of goals over the back when you're in such a good team that loves to do that sort of thing.
And funnily enough, his form decline seemed to happen almost immediately after that big contract extension.
Yeah, very interesting.
Mid to late last year. So, look, I hope for the Crows' sake that Jenkins can... Obviously, he was dropped a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
He came back into a little bit of form, but I think he just needs to hit the ball up more. He needs to lead up more and actually crash
like Tom Lynch does for Adelaide.
That's right. Like, yeah. Jenkins is such a big guy. When you see him in real life, he's a monster. Mm. He has the ability to hurt packs and crash packs and hurt people. So I think he needs to get into his mindset that he's a big fella instead of almost playing an Eddie Betts-style forward role. Yeah. He actually needs to turn into that power forward.
Just back on the Rory Sloane thing for a second, it's madness not to tag him, surely. When he's played poorly, Adelaide have lost. When he's played well, Adelaide have won.
Do you know what? I actually think in a funny way, this could be a blessing in disguise for Adelaide, though. It means that at mid-season, they can essentially change their midfield structure, and the Crouch boys and Rory Atkins and Curtly Hampton and these boys that go through the midfield can actually help him out. Instead of getting found out in round 21, 22, 23, not having enough time to adjust their system for the finals, it could be a good thing that this is happening mid-season against some pretty good teams, because it means that Don Pike and the midfield coaches actually have to work out a strategy to get around this.
Yep.
Because it can't be as simple as if Sloan gets tagged, the Crows can't win. They need to work out a way around this, and I think it's a good time to do it because it's mid-season. It gives them a couple of months to, I guess, try some new things. Look, they're going to play finals, barring an absolute catastrophe. They probably need to finish top four and probably top two if they're going to win the flag. But at least it gives them a bit of time to adjust.
And I would have faith in them to make those changes.
I agree.
Because what we saw last year, when they were 4-4, they were winning some games, but it was a little bit not real. But then they changed the game style. They made themselves into a more legitimate team, and they went on an incredible run from there.
Yeah,
they probably
amazing.
Lost, what, two more games the rest of the season, including the finals?
Yeah.
So if there's a coaching staff that can do it, I reckon Don Pike can do it.
Tom, you're an Adelaide boy, and you've read Adelaide papers growing up.
Yeah.
They have been savage this week, and we don't want to bash our own media compatriots over there because, of course, they're doing a terrific job, especially the News Corp ones. But I'm really interested in your take on the doomsday sayers for Adelaide.
Yeah, look, I mean, let's take a real big step back here. They're sitting after midpoint of the season, they're sitting second. So it is certainly not a crisis. I think one of the headlines in the Adelaide Advertiser during the week was, is it crisis time for the Adelaide Crows? I mean, come on.
Well, it's a question. And you just answer no to that, surely.
Surely.
And sure, article.
That's right. And you could tell that Don Pike in his press conference midweek was a little bit, he was kind of bristled at the talk that, you know, there was inverted commas crisis. I will say this, though, Tom, is that when I walked in to the Fox Footy offices on Monday morning, I got a lot of stick of a lot of you boys in particular saying, oh, what's happened to your boys? You're no good. Crisis time. So, look, that is the murmurings. But, look, I think we need to take a step back. And like I said, if I would prefer this happen now as opposed to round 23 like it did last year when they ballsed up that game against West Coast and cost themselves a top four spot. At least this is this uncertainty or inverted commas crisis, Tom, is happening mid-year because they've got time to rectify it.
And to put some perspective on that Geelong loss as well, Geelong's changed themselves over the last 3 weeks. They've become the 2016 Geelong rather than the 2017 Geelong. They're playing, pressing forward more. They're getting more inside 50s instead of trying to what I believe they were doing at the start of the season, which was playing a bit further back and trying to get better inside 50s rather than more. So now that Geelong's going back to that game style, it's working really well. Dangerfield's sort of handing off more from the contest instead of just pumping it forward and getting weak inside 50s. So this was a team that Adelaide matched up reasonably poorly against last year. We saw Geelong beat them twice, I believe.
Yeah.
And now they just ran into that again at Simmons. Of course, you're going to lose that game. That makes a lot of sense. So the crisis talk, obviously overblown.
And one thing I will say, I know it could have blown out against Geelong in Geelong, but they only lost by 4 goals.
Yeah, like it didn't.
It probably was a flattering scoreline. However, they could have been absolutely blown out of the water. So I think it was a positive that they came back in that last quarter. And there was even, look, maybe I'm the eternal optimist when it comes to it, but there was almost a little glimmer. It's like, hang on, I think they kicked 4 or 5 in a row. Sure,
there was a pulse for a second.
That's right.
It?
Like, sure, Geelong took the foot off the pedal. I totally get that. But it could have been a lot worse than it was. Yeah.
Well, this Friday night, Adelaide St Kilda promised to be a ripper, of course. You can watch it on Fox Footy. St Kilda hasn't been Adelaide since 2011 when they beat them by 103 points. So it's a big game for them. Nick Riewoldt not playing, of course.
Yeah, and one side note, it's actually the 20th anniversary of the Crows' first premiership, so I believe all of those boys who played in that premiership are going along to the game. They can have it, obviously, getting on a couple of tubes, I assume, during the game, Thomas. And then I believe they're heading to Roo's Pub the day after for a bit of a session.
Obviously, so, Mark Rusciutto played in that flag as well.
No, he didn't. He was injured.
The 97 flag, just 98. Did not know that.
No, that's right. So him and Tony Modra, two All-Australians that year, didn't play in the flag.
It's weird how they played that grand final in June.
They played against St Kilda, Maxi. That's the celebration.
I understand. Yes.
Essendon, Port Adelaide. I want to talk about this game just for a little bit because Essendon, I find them probably the hardest team to read in the AFL this year. Very difficult to pick whether they're going to win or lose. Do they have one more crack in them before they reach the bye? It's been a long spell of games for them, especially after many of their players didn't play last year.
Yeah, I think they probably do. It's going to be a tough game against Port because I rate Port quite a bit.
Yeah.
But the question is whether Essendon's for real. And we didn't know that at the start of the season. We almost don't know much more. I think everyone put them on the fringes of the eight, and that's sort of where they are now. There's been questions about whether they've been too tired. And obviously in the loss to Fremantle, we saw that quite a bit. But they looked all right. They've looked all right in recent weeks. I would say that they're a chance, but Port too strong for mine.
Even at Etihad Stadium, Tom?
Yeah, well, I think actually Etihad Stadium will suit Port.
Yeah,
it's
really
not as big as Adelaide.
Only game this year they're playing at Etihad.
Yeah, I just think that with their speed, the Pollex, Sam Powell Pepper, I think they're going to be half decent.
Pollock's been good this year.
Very good.
He's been in the Champion Data's team of the season as a wingman.
But with all due respect to him, he is a good player in a good side.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you need them. You need those ball carriers, those outside, you know, really good kicks. I dare say if he was playing for a lower side, he'd struggle a little bit more. But hey, like I said, good luck to him. You need those players. But I reckon, back to your question, Tom, I think Etihad might actually suit Port pretty well. It's obviously a hard ground. They've got some good runners and they've got some inside players. But I reckon this one, it literally just comes down to the ruck duel. I mean, if Paddy Ryder plays the way that he has been, which has been a remarkable comeback from a year off. He's in All-Australian form for mine. And obviously Tom Bellchambers has just come back from injury. He's only played a handful, I think only 2 or 3 games this season. So I think if Paddy Ryder can get on top of Bellchambers, which I'm picking that he will, I think Port will be way too good.
And in terms of All-Australian form, you've also got Charlie Dixon.
Yep.
Who's been incredible. And I think everyone sort of, the casual fan's opinion of Dixon is based on the Geelong shot clock thing.
Yeah.
But you look at his output, he's been one of the best contested marks in the comp, kicking a lot of goals, and he's putting on a lot of forward pressure. I think there was some talk during this week that he's lost a bit of weight, which is helping his aerobic fitness and stuff like that. He's doing really well pressure-wise, and that's what Port's doing. Their team defence has been excellent. Their defence is one of the best in the comp, but it's a very anonymous defence. I think probably most of their defence could work into the Fox Footy offices and people wouldn't recognise
it. True.
Anyone else's.
Watching Charlie Dixon against Hawthorn and Paddy Ryder made me this thing. They seem to be the two best ruck forward players in the same team in the competition at the moment. And you would not have picked that at the start of the year. Ryder coming off a year off and Dixon a much maligned, inconsistent type. He's 26 now, Charlie Dixon, and he's in his absolute prime. And as you said, Max, they're both playing very good football.
Yeah, something seems to have turned for Dixon, doesn't it? Oh, we heard from Ken Hinckley and the guys in the off-season saying that he kind of struggled when he first got to Adelaide. And I think what's happened is that Port sort of wrapped their arms around him. I believe he's a lot more settled there, and it's clearly coming out in his footy. He's kicked 24 goals. He's averaging 6.5 marks per game, and for a big guy, that's really important. Max, you mentioned his contested marks in particular. And Tommy, as you mentioned, against Hawthorn last week, he was just about unstoppable, and it was a real... You could see a real changing of the guard, particularly when he was dominating Josh Gibson, who's been such a good defender over such a long time.
I think it was great to see for all neutral fans. People really enjoyed that.
Yeah, you could really see a changing in the guard.
Yep. This of course, is at Etihad Stadium on Saturday night. Port haven't been blown out of the water at all this year, really. They've lost four games, three of them by under three goals. That must bode well for them this weekend.
Yeah, and I think if you look at who they've played, they've lost small margins to very good teams, thumped bad teams. This is one of the most interesting ones because it's an okay team, a fringe contender team. This is where you actually see, if they thump Essendon, they're a proper contender. If they don't, well, you can have some questions.
And there's a lot of upside for Port Adelaide. Considering how poor they were last year, they actually have a really good draw.
Yep, always helps.
In the next sort of 10 to 8 weeks. So they're going to win a lot more than they lose, and you'd think that top four is an absolute near certainty for Port Adelaide this year.
With that percentage.
Given their percentage and their draw going forward, they will not lose a game at Adelaide Oval.
Imagine
and their away games are actually quite easy, per se.
Imagine a qualifying final, Adelaide Port. And it could easily happen. Second v 3, it could easily happen in the Adelaide Oval. Imagine that, Tom.
That makes me sweat just thinking about it.
Nothing to do with the puffy jacket you're wearing, which is very nice as well at the moment, Tom. Just a very quick one on Hawthorn Gold Coast, Saturday afternoon at the MCG. I'll be there, Max, watching as a fan.
Enjoy.
Thank you. Not a big crowd expected. I think they're expecting 26,000. Are we any chance to see a repeat of Hawthorn Gold Coast from earlier in the year?
I wouldn't have thought, given Gold Coast sort of situation and the fact that it's at the AG and not at Metricon. Mm. Hawthorn's such a weird team. You look at all their numbers and it says, well, they're a clear bottom four team. And they've won four games and just showed up in games against like Sydney, where you can't tell.
Isn't it strange that they're playing again already, by the way?
Yeah, it is unusual.
It's a real anomaly. Look,
Bulldogs and Sydney are playing again as well.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah. So I can't see Gold Coast actually having an impact here. Hawthorn, I actually still rate. Maybe it's the scars from...
Stop living in the past, Tom.
But I reckon Hawthorn will actually be too good here.
All right, let's go through the tips. So we've got, of course, Sydney Western Bulldogs, the Shane Biggs Cup. Adelaide St Kilda versus St Kilda is the Fergus Watts Cup, or as you said this morning, Tom, the Malcolm Blight Cup.
Yes.
Hawthorn Gold Coast is an obvious one, the Jaguar O'Meara Cup. Brisbane Freo, the Des Headland Cup, number one draft pick.
Prestigious.
Absolutely. The Essendon Port could be a number of players, but we've gone with Damien Hardwick Cup just ahead of Gavin Wanganeen.
I was about to say Wanganeen. Yes.
And he could attend because his team's on a bye.
That's exactly right. And another one that could have been any number of players this year, Carlton GWS. We've gone with a Jed Lamb Cup, Max.
It's about 70,000 cups there.
They've all come at the one time, or within 2 years. Melbourne Collingwood. I thought about going Lyndon Dunn. I thought, no, let's go with one of the great Brownlow medalists of all time, Shane Woden, the Shane Woden Cup. Like and, of course, bias to North Melbourne, Richmond, West Coast and Geelong. Can I have your tips, please, for this weekend, Tom?
Yes, I think I think Sydney will be too good for the Western Bulldogs. Adelaide over St Kilda, Hawthorn over the Gold Coast. I think Fremantle will beat Brisbane. Port way too good for Essendon. GWS are likely to kick a cricket score against Carlton. And I like Melbourne over Collingwood, only due to Collingwood's injuries.
I'm going to believe in Sydney still for one more week and pip them over the Dogs. I'm going to say the Crows reasonably big over St Kilda. Hawthorn close against Gold Coast. It could be a reasonably interesting game. I'm going to tip Brisbane against Fremantle.
Okay.
I don't think Fremantle's very good. And I think Brisbane's going to win like one or two more games this season, and it's going to randomly pop up. And a game without Sandy for the Dockers.
It could be this one.
At the Gabba is as good as any chance.
Yeah, compelling case.
That's actually quite good. Stephen Martin. And Stephen Martin could run a muck without Sam Lenz.
Rockliffe's back, I believe.
Yeah. Right. And they actually tried quite hard against Collingwood. It was a bit sad, actually. They tried really hard, Brisbane. They just weren't good enough. Not a bad tip from you, Max.
Port Adelaide, probably much too good for Essendon. GWS, way too good for Carlton. So it means Carlton will win because it's Carlton, and Melbourne over Collingwood, I'd suspect.
Well, remember to jump on foxfooty.com.au/AllAus to pick from the squad of 40 hard nuts, your all-Australian team. Jump on that because that is a big promotion being run at the moment by foxfooty.com.au and Riley Beveridge, of course, running that promotion. This big hello to Ben Waterworth as well in Europe, Max and Chad. It's always good to hear that he's hearing the podcast from over there, but also he'll be back very soon, so you can tune into the Thursday Match Committee podcast in the future.
And Benny, if you're listening, just lay off the social media. You know, you're killing us with all the photos, big fella.
I'm seeing a little bit too much at the
moment. Especially when it's freezing in Melbourne.
absolutely freezing. Tom, thanks for joining us.
And pleasure. Thanks, boys.
Have a good week on Fox Sports News 500 and AFL tonight.
Thank you.
And Max, foxfooty.com.au. Have a good week and a good weekend.
Honour and a privilege, Tom. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you on Monday morning, Queen's birthday, for the Round 12 Review podcast. Until then, have a great weekend of football.